every person's story is different. And I think that's what I want to highlight to our residents, is that your story and your journey is going to be different. And there's no timeline.
Yes.
You know, everyone has a different timeline. And I think at the end of the day, it's all going to work out in whatever is right for you.
Good day. Welcome to Ripples, Physicians Wellbeing, a space to discuss coping with stressors while training in the field of medicine and tips for overall wellness.
Learn more about the wellness home services at gmewellness.utesca.edu. And don't forget to subscribe to stay updated with new episodes wherever you enjoy podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to all of our audience. And we have a very special guest today. We have Dr. Carrie Calvo-Strube. She's a breast surgical oncologist and the Associate Program Director for Wellness for the surgery residency here at UTESCA.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to participate and share my story, I guess.
Yes, please. And it's so good to have someone that we know how busy you are. I know personally how busy and how good you are in what you do. And that you take the time to be here and share your story and your knowledge with our residents and fellows everywhere that listen to our podcast.
Yes, welcome. I also want to talk about how busy you are. And on top of that, very important is you're so compassionate and care about residents and each one of their wellness, and that is why we have invited you, and then also want to share your knowledge with others. Just to jump right in, I have a question for you that kind of concerns me, because we hear a lot about young people getting breast cancer, and then some stats are really concerning, and then and some I feel have been taken out of context, although I'm not an expert on it. So we would love your feedback on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so just kind of overall statistics for breast cancer. As of right now, our stats are 1 in every 8 women in their lifetime is going to experience breast cancer. Uh-huh. So that's about a 12% risk overall. The incidence of breast cancer in young women, so women younger than 40, is low overall, but it is rising. So we are seeing some concerning statistics that cumulatively we're seeing women with breast cancer at a younger and younger age. And certainly I am seeing that in my practice, and that is alarming.
Yeah.
I'm seeing women in their 20s and their 30s who are outside of screening recommendations who are getting breast cancer without a family history and negative genetics. So we don't really know an exact reason why that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's probably multifactorial, but there are statistics that in the recent years, in the last 10 years, those statistics are rising for young women. So unfortunately, cancer doesn't discriminate. So you can never be too young to have breast cancer. It is rare, but we see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So from my standpoint, I think really the best thing is to have breast risk assessment at age 25. You can never be too young to have an assessment of your family history, your overall risk factors. And then that way we're identifying women who are at higher risk because of family history, lifestyle, things like that. And we can get them plugged in potentially for higher or earlier screening is what I should say.
So you would recommend our residents to do this with their PCPs or GYNs?
Yes, with their PCPs or with their GYNs when they're going for their annual well woman exam or just their annual well check.
Okay.
I think that's the best time at age 25 or even earlier. In your 20s, start to talk with your primary care physician, whether that's your family medicine doctor, internal medicine, or your gynecologist about your breast health and your family history.
Yeah.
And then that way, if you are considered high risk because of different things, you know, breast cancer in your family, or maybe you've had radiation to your chest wall in the past, they can refer you to a specialist and we can give you specific recommendations based off of your personal risk.
Yes. And this is so important because we see that's one of the things that we address commonly with our residents and fellows. Part of self-care is really taking care of your physical health. And it's so hard to take time to do your regular well checks with your PCP. Yes. Some of them even have a hard time finding PCPs. We try to be a connection between PCPs, now dental, psychiatry.
Yes.
But it's hard. We know it's hard to take some time to do that.
It is hard, and it's hard particularly for the residents because they don't have control over their schedule.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they work so hard and they work so much that finding, you know, it sounds so easy outside of when you're living it day to day to say you just need one day to
exactly.
go visit the doctor.
Yes.
But that's really hard to plan in advance.
Yes.
But it really is so important. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing outside from seeing a primary care physician once a year to get a mm-hmm. breast assessment and to just do overall health examination is to have breast self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So we used to advocate for breast self-examinations. Now we're not really advocating for that anymore because there's no data to support that that has improved breast cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But I think mm-hmm. having an awareness of what your breasts normally look and feel like, you know your body best. Yeah. So I tell all my patients that. So if they notice any changes in their breast, a new lump, skin changes, nipple discharge, anything like that, bring it up to your healthcare provider, and then they can get you started where you need to be in yeah. terms of diagnostic workup or physical exam, etc. So I do think that's another key piece, particularly for our young patients who are outside of recommendations to get annual screening.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you so much for that. So maybe we can encourage our residents just to take half a day whenever plan it, so they can be more aware of their breast health.
Yes,
and connect
absolutely.
With the physician. You know, yes. That is a good point that we can advocate for our residents.
And not to add to their stress, but I think just this knowledge that even at 25, 30, we just need to pay attention. Just pay attention
exactly.
and be yeah. aware yeah. there
proactive
is a possibility. Because I think sometimes we tend to worry about things that are out of our control and not worry about the things that we could actually pay attention and
yes.
be under our control. That in this case is just be aware, keep an eye on it.
Exactly. Be aware, keep an eye on it. Unfortunately, it can happen. It's rare.
Yeah.
But I think it underscores the prevalence of everything that you guys are talking about. Take control of your health, have awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the earlier that we detect, the better.
Yes.
But it's also just good to be aware of your health, your physical well-being in general.
Yes.
It really fits to our wellness. The way we address wellness is take control of what you can do. So
yes.
being aware of your family history, being aware of any changes, and talking with someone
mm-hmm.
would give them a little bit more control on how they can navigate themselves.
Absolutely.
Because the media always talks about, so much among young, and then people worry about it. So this is, thank you for clarifying on
absolutely.
Those. Yeah.
And
yes.
you know, I think you made a really important point of talking with your family about your family history. I can't tell you how many times I have young patients with breast cancer, even, you know, postmenopausal patients with breast cancer, and I ask them about their family history, and they say, I don't think there's been anybody in my family with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them, why don't you go ask your mom or ask your aunts? And then they come back to a follow-up visit and they say, you know what, there actually has been all these women in my family with breast cancer, ovarian cancer, or what have you, but we just never talked about it.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I think probing those questions,
mm-hmm.
again, 1 in every 8 women, that's
yeah,
pretty
it's an
common.
Alarming
it's an
figure.
Alarming
yeah.
number.
Mm-hmm.
So chances are you're going to know somebody in your life, somebody in your social circle
definitely.
That has suffered
yes.
from or had breast cancer. And so there's a community for sure
yes.
of survivors. But I think, you know, point one is figuring out, talking to your own family and
yes.
figuring out what is your risk, what's your family's history.
Yes. And this is going to be a big of a change up, but talking about family, I think is the perfect way to introduce it. Another common worry among our residents, especially female residents,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, is it too late for me to start a family if I start after residency, especially the ones in surgical residencies, and even just being single. There's so much stress surrounding being single and thinking I'm never going to find somebody because I don't have time to meet people. But we know that you personally have a success story with this.
I do. I mean, I'm very blessed to have 2 young children, a super supportive husband. So, but I did things on my own timeline. I do completely understand and have had these conversations with my own surgery residents about it's really hard to meet people when I'm working 80 hours a week. I'm not in charge of my schedule. People outside of the world of medicine don't really understand that. Mm-hmm. Even my own family, when I was a resident, my dad's a physician, had a hard time understanding, what do you mean you can't be off every Christmas or Thanksgiving? So that is really, really challenging.
Very, very true.
So I completely understand where they're coming from. I do think that at this point in time, this generation has just a different level of societal pressure than maybe even I did when I was a resident five, however many years ago. I won't calculate that. Because of social media.
Yes.
Yes.
So there's so much of a comparison game of what they're seeing with their peers, their friends from college, their friends from medical school who are getting engaged, getting married, having babies, and they're seeing that so easily. And there's so much pressure and stress on themselves. So I think that's one piece of what makes it so hard and so vulnerable for them. But I think the other piece that is completely out of their control is, as women, we do unfortunately have a biological clock.
Exactly.
Right? And so I remember feeling that in myself. I'm happy to talk about my personal journey. I met my husband when I was 19. We met in college.
Wonderful.
And I think that's pretty rare now. So I didn't have to navigate these dating apps and things like that. And that's a whole nother ballpark I have no experience in. So I met my husband when I was 19. We were college sweethearts. And we were actually long distance throughout all of medical school because he was active duty military. So I was at A&M for medical school. He was in the military, and we were matched into surgery residency actually here at UTESCA. And we were long distance throughout my residency as well.
Wow.
So that's kind of a unique spin. And even though I met him young, all of my friends from college were married their college sweethearts 1 to 2 years out. And we did not, because we just were focused on our careers and our passions, and we supported each other. And we kind of knew, well, we support each other. If we're here together at the end of all this, then that's great. And that was the goal, obviously. And now I can tell you that was
sure
that was successful, but it for sure was hard and challenging. I missed him. Not having him in the same city,
especially
the same
during
state, during residency when it's stressful and hard. But you know, I tried to ground myself during that time and say, while that is hard to be away and to be distant, it allowed me to focus on what I wanted to focus on, which was learning to be a really good surgeon. And it allowed him to focus on his career. And at the end of all that, I mean, we got married in the middle of residency, and we were still long distance for 2 years, long distance marriage. I probably wouldn't have done it when I did, but there was definitely societal pressure.
Yes.
For sure. All our friends are, why aren't you getting married? When are you going to get married? Where's the ring? Every time we would see each other, our families too. And so I do think, honestly, we probably fell into some of that pressure. But we were committed to each other. We'd been together for 7-8 years at that point. And so we decided to get married in the middle of residency, knowing we're going to be long distance. We'd been long distance already for, you know, 6 years at that point. So we understood what our reality was.
Yes.
And that's hard to explain too.
It is.
Yes, we're married, but my husband lives in Florida. I'm a surgery resident here.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of my friends were like, is he real? And his friends too. Is your wife real? I never see
her. Did you make her up just to
Did you make her up? Is this a fake wedding ring you're wearing?
Yes.
And so that was really hard to navigate too, because that was different from the norm.
Yes.
But again, you have to focus on what feels right for you. And that felt right for me. I was committed to him. I was committed to residency, learning how to be a good resident. I wanted to support him in his military career and vice versa. So we made it work. And then, you know, eventually, obviously, time goes on. I finish residency. He moves here. And just fate, got military appointment in Dallas where I matched for fellowship. And then now I'm here in San Antonio as military appointment here. And so that worked out really well for us. I think the other piece just to talk about is having kids. When's the right time to have kids?
Exactly.
Is it possible to have kids in residency? I personally didn't, but I have several colleagues who have. And it is doable for sure. It's really, it's challenging though.
Yes.
I mean, not going to sugarcoat it. It's challenging. So I'm a mom of young kids, and it was my personal choice to wait until after training was done.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I personally wanted to, I had time on my side though. I was still in my early 30s when I finished. And so I knew that I had a little bit of time, even though it was later than most of our friends.
Yes.
Who weren't in medicine. But I wanted, again, I wanted to focus on finishing my training, figuring out how to be a good surgeon, mm-hmm. and then do the really hard thing of figuring out how to be a good mom. Yes. Didn't necessarily want to do it at the same time, but that was my personal path and
sure.
my choice.
Yes.
And certainly I think it's doable if you feel like it's right, if residents feel like it's right for them to do it at the same time.
Yes.
I do think that you need support, though.
Yes.
Yes, it support is so crucial. Important to have support. And I hear, as you were talking about your personal journey, I hear so many strengths that you talked about. Yeah. I knew it was difficult and we still wanted to do it. So you were kind of open to the experiences and you had a support system and you counted on that.
Yeah.
And you also allowed yourself for personal growth.
Yes,
that is important.
I think having awareness that what you're doing is going to be challenging.
Yes.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And having, giving yourself grace that you're going to have hard times, it's going to be stressful, it's not going to be perfect.
Yes.
And I think, you know, even though I share my personal story, every person's story is different. And I think that's what I want to highlight to our residents is that your story and your journey is going to be different. And there's no timeline.
Yes.
You know, everyone has a different timeline. And I think at the end of the day, it's all going to work out in whatever is right for you. I
yes.
believe in a higher power and I believe in fate. And I think that eventually now I can look back and say, well, that was the right path for me.
Yes.
And things obviously have worked
yes.
out great. I have two beautiful children. My husband and I live in the same city, in the same house now.
Yes.
But then, of course, I had concerns and stress because yeah. it wasn't the same marriages that some of my co-residents had where
yes.
they're living in the same
exactly.
household. And so, you know, I think that just highlights that your story can be different. Your timeline can be different. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But you have to give yourself grace that your journey is not going to be comparable to somebody else's. And I think that's what's particularly
yes.
hard for our residents is they see and they, it's so easy to compare on social media
yes.
to say, well, my story doesn't look like that person. Something's wrong with me.
Yes.
Yes. Personalizing, it's about me. You're so right. I was telling Adriana, I've been wanting to ask you this question. Maybe that's why you're so compassionate. And then that's why you're a wellness
associate program director for wellness.
For wellness. Gosh, yeah. And I hear from residents that how compassionate, how much time you take, although you wear so many hats. And from the other side, from patients, some of my friends who have gotten treated from you, they just speak volumes about how compassionate. So how do you wear so many hats and still all these things and then show compassion? And also you're known to be excellent in your field. So how do you do that?
Well, thank you for that. You guys are making my face turn red and my ears turn red. I appreciate all of that so much. You know, I think for me, the first thing that I think about when I wake up in the morning is it's an honor and a privilege for me to do what I do. You know, obviously we talked about my journey in residency, how that was my passion and how it was hard, but I was dedicated to
yes.
learning how to be a good mm-hmm. surgeon. When I figured out that taking care of women with breast problems and breast cancer was my passion, I was dedicated to doing that extra year of training.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I go into work every day thinking, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to do what I do, to take care of these patients, but also to work with residents.
Yes.
I was very fortunate in my residency and in my training to have really wonderful mentors who shepherded me, who were patient with me. And so I really try to model that when I'm with residents. I certainly had other attendings who were quicker and rushed and didn't have as much patience. And I remember
yeah.
that. And I remember feeling like I'm just slowing them down. And there is a reality of, you know, maybe my clinic runs faster when I'm by myself, but I do love the opportunity to teach. And these
yes.
are surgeons that are going to be taking over for me when I'm, or maybe being my partner one day or taking care of other people. And so I do think that obviously that is so important. So I try to model the mentors that I've had, but I also just try to take a moment and think of, you know, what is the best thing for their education? Yes, it's going to take a little bit more time, but that's why they're here. That's why I'm here. That's why, you know, I was driven to take a job here in academics because I am passionate about teaching and supporting the next generation of medical providers. And so I think that's part of it.
That's what I appreciate so much about you. I'm hearing that you're very intentional in what you do every day, and that brings a level of respect of you're grounded, you make your priorities clear for yourself. And I think that makes a big difference for everybody around you, your residents, your family, your patients.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we talked about wearing a lot of different hats. Uh-huh. And so as a career woman, as a surgeon, as a mom, every day is a different type to-do list.
Yep.
So I do have to be intentional about what is important for that day. What needs to get done? What are the top things on my to-do list in each aspect of my life?
Yes.
Of course.
And give myself grace when I can't complete that to-do list. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that's clinical work and I can't sit down and, you know, play trains for an hour with my son because I've got to catch up on clinical work, but I'm going to make up for it the next day. And sometimes it's the other. I'm going to go on to trunk or treat with my kids and I'm not going to be in the office or I'm not catching up on charting. And it's really easy to look at that and say, well, I'm stressed because now I'm behind in work and maybe I should have done this or maybe I should have done that. But there's only 24 hours in the day and some of that you've got to sleep.
Yes.
So I kind of look at every day as a different priority and give myself grace when I can't get the to-do list done. Yeah. I mean, I literally have a to-do list on my phone that is never ending.
Yes.
I don't really think there's such a thing as true balance in work and in home life, but I think having work-life wellness.
Yes.
And giving yourself grace for the things that you can do helps you to be hopefully successful.
When I teach yoga, and we do balance poses, I usually talk about balance and counterbalance. The real balance is not static. You have to sway a little bit to find that place where you're more stable, but it's not a static, rigid thing. And I think that's what you're talking about. Perfect balance, thinking, I'm going to spend the same amount of time here, there. I don't think that's realistic, but just to try to find what is important today and dedicating time to that, that's huge. The other thing I really appreciate about what you are saying is that you refer to the norm and you make it very clear. There's a trauma specialist called Dr. Gabor Mate, and he talks often about that. Normal doesn't mean healthy. Doesn't mean right for you. It just means common, right? It's the
normal.
It's what most people do.
Rather than.
And yes. Yeah. And we are in a society where maybe stress is normal. We're all stressed. Does that mean it's right and healthy? No. Yeah. It just means it's we're not. All feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when we compare to others and we start thinking what's normal and what's not, I think it's huge to be able to say normal only means a lot of people are doing this, but it doesn't mean it's the right thing for me to do.
Yes, absolutely.
Or it's
absolutely.
A healthy thing for me to
do. Yeah, yeah. I hear you as you're telling us about your journey and how you balance. I can sense this fluid self in a way. It's like, you know, you are taking care of this and that's the priority at this point. And tomorrow, like today, it's spending time with your children is important. So you're more fluid in the sense nothing is cut in stone. I have to do it at this point. As long as you prioritize and you're, you know, obviously patients come first, all those things. But it's just a wonderful way of how you make everything happen and wear all those hats and still be present.
So I have had really terrible work habits, but I had to look at myself and say, this is not sustainable for life. I have to make a change. I have to advocate for myself and not just for me and my health, but for my family. Yes. Because I was getting up at 3, closing charts or catching up on work, and then exhausted.
Yes.
So I wasn't able to give my son and my sure. family the time. I was too exhausted to cook dinner. And that's okay, too.
Yes.
But, you know, I just wasn't happy with the trajectory and kind of the overall balance in my life or wellness of my mm-hmm. life. And so I had to advocate for myself for a change. And that's hard because I think work won't do that for you.
Yeah.
So you have to advocate for that yourself. And that was hard for me as a junior faculty person. I did have to learn to give myself grace and be fluid with the to-do list. And that certainly has made a world of difference in my work life and my home life and kind of every day, just recognizing we're not perfect. We can't do everything. The more yeah. stuff I sign myself up for, the more of a longer to-do list I'm going to
exactly.
have.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
The older my children get, the more activities they have. That's just kind of the natural part of life.
Yes.
And some of that is talking to friends and colleagues who have lived through that before.
Mm-hmm.
And them saying, you know, that's, I have been there too. I completely understand that stress. And that does normalize it, even though our lives are a little bit different.
Yes.
It normalizes the stress, it normalizes the challenges, and it just makes you feel not alone.
Yes.
And so I think that's hearing other stories from other women, other moms, other career women is really helpful. And that's part of why I tell my residents, I'm an open book. Your life is not going to look like my life. Yeah. You may not be married at the point where I was married. You may not have kids at the point where I did. You may have kids earlier, but I'm an open book because
yeah.
we can only help each other yes. when we share. And I think it's, if I didn't share with my residents, well, I had this horrible
yes.
work habits and that was not good for my life and it was not sustainable. It makes them think, well, you're doing all these things and it's so yes. easy, but it's not.
Yes.
And I think having other people understand, I know that it's also hard for you and commiserating with that and having compassion for that, it really helps to help you feel like it's okay that I didn't get things
yes.
done.
Yes, yes. And I'm going to invite our audience, if they listen to the episodes on boundaries, to re-listen. If you haven't listened on our first season, we had 2 episodes on boundaries because it's very important to yes. figure that out. Where do I have to advocate for myself? What do I need for my
mm-hmm.
life?
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me, Carrie, to you know, the most important, what we consider the most important part of our podcast is at the end of the day. The podcast is called Ripples because we want to leave with our residents and fellows something, a call to action. And then from there, hopefully they'll create wellness ripples that expand to others. And by, we call that a pebble. And by that, we mean anything that you invite them to do, there is an action item or a reflection or a practice that they can take with them. So what pebble do you want to leave with us today?
Oh, gosh. You know, that's a really, really good question. And I think just to kind of tie in all the things that we've talked about,
uh-huh.
we've talked about self-care for patients, advocating for that self-awareness, but also for yourself. So I think really kind of the biggest thing for me is from not only patient advocates, but also as residents, as fellows, as trainees, is to take care of yourself, have awareness of your own health, but also give yourself grace for the period that you are in life. It is a point of time. We go through stages in life. You have to give yourself grace for the challenges that are expected, that are normal, but also don't forget to take care of yourself. I guess that's pretty vague, but I think that's my biggest thing is to just be intentional, about what your to-do list is, but give yourself grace when you can't do that and advocate. You have to advocate for your own health and the same thing for your patients. Advocate for their own self-awareness,
yes.
for their health.
Beautiful. Thank you so, so much for being here
Thank
with
you
us.
For having me. It's
Thank
been
you.
Such a pleasure.
It's wonderful to have you as our guest. It's been an honor.
I appreciate it.
Ripples Physicians Wellbeing is made possible by the Joe R. and Teresa Lozano Long School of Medicine Office for Graduate Medical Education. To contact us or learn more about the Wellness Home, visit gmewellness.utesca.edu.
This podcast is inspired by the Dalai Lama's powerful quote. Just as ripples spread out when a single pebble is dropped into water, the actions of individuals can have far-reaching effects. We provide physicians with pebbles, tangible and actionable practices that can help make positive impacts in their personal and professional lives.